Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
How many of you have ever had to face a giant in your life? Can I see your hands? Something that was a circumstance that was seemingly insurmountable. It was overwhelming to you, at least in the way that you were experiencing it. It was overwhelming to you. How many of you would say, yeah, I've had a moment like that before. Can I see your hands? Well, when all of this started going on, think about everything that's going on right now, right? So one, it's one thing to deal with a virus. It's another thing to see that there's racial tension in our country right now. You also see, going back, a friend just a couple of weeks ago throws something out on social media where from his apartment, he takes a picture, a video. And as he's taking the video, you actually see sheep running the streets of his city. And what he says, he just took the video. He said, that's it. The fifth seal has been broken and the end is near. You know, we're talking murder hornets and stuff. And that's just where the other day I said, all right, Lord, let's just have a do-over on 2020. What do you say? Well, there are certain effects that a crisis can have in your life. And over the last several weeks, what we've been talking about are the kinds of emotions that come up because of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Things that are, if we're not careful, they're in control of us rather than us being in control of them. And it reminded me of someone that I've benefited from greatly over the years, named Henry Cloud. Now, Henry Cloud wrote a book called Boundaries, which has sold over 2 million copies. He's written a book for leaders called Boundaries for Leaders. He's written another one on boundaries for your marriage. He is a devout believer, but he also has been a clinician, a clinical counselor for a number of decades. I would highly recommend his books to you. When all of this started to happen, I was in a webinar with him, and he was talking about the psychological effects that people will experience in a time of crisis. And let me talk you through some of the things that he mentioned. Here was one. He said, you know, when you think about who you are, your mind maps the way that things are supposed to be, at least for you. When something is out of the ordinary, you will register that experience as an error. Now, think of something very simple. You know, you're walking through your house, you're used to the way that your furniture is arranged in your living room, but you go to work, you come home, and the furniture is a little bit different. Your brain actually processes this as there's an error, there's a mistake here. And so what you have to do is you have to reset the system so that people can adapt to the situation that they find themselves in. And here's what he said. He said, what that means is as you're processing, skip furniture, because that one's easy, right? But when you're processing as much as we're having to process right now, what we have to do, number one, is this. He says, you have to actually name the error. You have to name what it is that you're going through. You don't act like it's not there. You have to realize that it's there. But also, it's not enough just to name it. You also have to talk about how this has changed you. You have to talk about how this has affected you. Guys, we're the worst at that. We just are. I tend to internalize everything. He says you have to talk about it because what he said is this, like a computer, it creates more RAM space in your noggin so that you can process what you are going through. If you're not thinking of something like a virus or racial tension, you could be thinking of something else, like a death of a loved one. You have to talk through it. Create some space so that you can handle it better. Now, here's why. The reason this is used is because of how you're made. And what he goes on to say is this. He says, when you look at the architecture of a person, we're shaped a lot like this. And that's, by the way, a picture of Henry Cloud. He says, first, we think of our foundations. You know, as a foundation, we are relational. We have relatedness and we have connectedness. Jesus even talks about this when he says that we are knitted together. We are built to have relationships with each other. And in a crisis, what happens is our foundations become disconnected. How many of you would say in all this, that's exactly what I've experienced. I've had a lot of disconnection in a lot of routine and in a lot of relationships that I'm used to having. And what that also goes to show is the second thing that he points out is that your structure gets absolutely blown. You know this. I mean, you think of a time when a parent is diagnosed with cancer and you have to completely rearrange your schedule because you know that you have a long-term care situation that is in front of you. Your structure just got completely upended. But with the way that we're built, we love routine. Just different routines from person to person. Routine is what keeps us knowing what is coming. A crisis blows the structure. And when we don't have structure, here's the way that our body reacts to this. Our adrenal system starts to amp up. We stop, typically, if we're not careful, we stop thinking about things, we stop planning, and most people will then revert into one of three possibilities. They want to fight, they want to flight, or they want to freeze. They just don't know what to do at all when the structure is blown. Now, part of the reason for this, Henry Cloud points out, is the issue of control. Now, in some senses, we were made to exercise control over things. That's not a bad, it's one thing to be controlling of a person. That's not what I mean. But I'm talking about something else. You were designed in some ways to be a control freak. Don't abuse that this week, by the way, when you go home. In a crisis, what do you lose? In a crisis, that's exactly what you lose. You lose control. And as a result, what happens, he says, is we get to this place called learned helplessness. Learned helplessness. Here's the idea, or here's the way that it looks. I can't change anything, so why does anything that I do actually matter? Most importantly, in this time, we tend to give up the type of control that's the most important, and it's self-control. The other reason that these times, like what we've been going through, are so difficult is because of the last thing, and it's because it gears toward our sense of accomplishment. We need to do something, and many people are not able to express their gifts in a time of crisis. Things have changed so much. Circumstances have changed so much that you're not able to exercise the gifts in the way that you're used to. And it leads to tremendous frustration. Just this last week, I was meeting with several African-American pastors that I'm very good friends with in the community. And we've had some honest conversations about what it is that our country is going through. And it's not like there's one thing that we're going through, right? We're going through a lot of things simultaneously, and we just throw in the murder hornets for fun, right? I mean, that's what we're going through. And as I was talking with them, I was asking some simple questions. You know, we want to see that there's some reconciliation happening here. What is it that's actually going to bring that about? And here's the thing. We sit there for a while, and we're not exactly sure. Felt like that. We're not exactly sure. Learned helplessness. What do you do? What do you do? And this can lead, if we're not very careful, this can lead us to depression. As Henry Cloud was pointing out, he said, when we get to this place where everything we see is so personal, like everything that we see is so personal, and it's not just that it's personal, it's that the things that we're struggling with become pervasive. It's not just we have a problem. It's that everything becomes a problem. We're locked into seeing the problems so clearly, and as a result, everything becomes permanent. This isn't going anywhere, and there's no way to beat it. Well, that is why I was looking into 1 Samuel chapter 17 this week. Because when you look at a guy named Goliath, he's a beast, isn't he? This guy's huge. Look at him. He's huge. He's huge. Think of what Israel was going through. And when you think of what a Goliath actually is, it's a situation or a circumstance that looms very large in your life to the point that it is overwhelming. If you look back at 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 4, it says that Goliath is over 9 feet tall. That guy, you know, the Rockets, they got rid of all of their tall people. I'm reading it this week and going, go get this guy. You need him, right? And he's huge. He's not just 9 feet tall and a pencil. He's big. And if you look at the experience that Israel had had with this guy, they were used to him whooping them. And he could fight. And you know this because of the way that Saul was reacting to this. Saul, who had killed his thousands of people, where was he when Goliath shows up? He's like, I think I'll hang in the palace for a little bit because I'm certainly not the guy that's going to go out there and confront him. See, that's a Goliath. A Goliath is a circumstance that looms large in your life to the point that it is overwhelming to you. It's not just that he's 9 feet tall. If you look in 1 Samuel 17, verses 5 and 7 and 17, he wears over 100 pounds of armor. Now, honestly, how many of y'all can handle that, right? And still wield a sword like that. You get the idea. And what was the response of the Israelites? You see it in verses 8 and 24. They saw Goliath and they feared him. They're shaking. I might be too. But this is what a giant of a problem can do to us. It can create emotional instability. You can't control your emotions because Goliath is controlling you, whether that's medical or relational or circumstantial or economic or emotional, or you actually have a 9-foot guy in front of you who wants to kill you. It could be any of those things. You get the idea. Now, the problem isn't just that Goliath is huge. We've already figured that out. It's that Goliath keeps coming back. Did you see it in 1 Samuel 17? He comes back 40 days in a row. He didn't just show up. He kept showing up. And that's exactly how you feel about a lot of the circumstances that you're dealing with right now. I just want it to go away. And then you wake up tomorrow and guess what? Goliath's still standing there saying, y'all ready to fight or not? And most of the Israelites, you notice what they're doing? This guy's on the hill. And what do? I think we'll just kind of hang back. Now notice they have to keep showing up for the 40 days to look and be like, oh man, he's there again. And then what do? They back up. Saul's still hanging at a very safe distance, right? And eventually they find this guy, right? I mean, when you think of Goliath, he is standing between you and the promises that you read in the Bible and the circumstances that you are facing in your life. He is what is, at least to you, that is who is standing in between you. And this is the great part of the story because you enter a little guy named David. Little guy, right? Now, David was described as ruddy and handsome. And even Goliath took notice of that. Like when he shows up, he's like, that guy is ruddy and handsome. And he didn't like it. It ticked him off, right? But he's also little. So one, he's like, that's a good looking guy. On the other hand, he's like, now this is the best that you can send because I mean, my gosh, he's like 2'2". No, I'm kidding. He's not 2'2", right? This is a joke. This is the best you got. All right, well, let's make quick of this guy and let's get on with it. David comes in. Now, here's the question. Famous story, but how does David kill Goliath? Now, I know what you're thinking. With sticks and stones, right? With sticks and stones, because sticks and stones will break his bones. Well, I want you to think about it. The key is actually found in two verses in 1 Samuel chapter 17, and I've provided them for you here. Let's look at them. On the one hand, in verse 26, it says, David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? All right, he just kind of went to it. Who's going to remove this disgrace from Israel? Who is this, and this is where you need to underline it, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Look again in verse 36. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. Now, by the way, he's talking about himself, right? This uncircumcised Philistine is going to be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. Do you see a theme between those two verses? He uses the word uncircumcised. And you say, well, why does that matter? See, we typically go to sticks and stones. David didn't go there. He's looking at Goliath and he says, here's what I see. I see a guy that is not protected by the covenant of God. And he's about to get took. He's going to get took. This is the first principle regarding what it is that you're facing in your life. And I want you to write this down. Defeating Goliath starts with having a spiritual perspective. He didn't grab the rocks first. He had a spiritual perspective first. He saw Goliath for who he was. He saw Goliath for who he was really against. And then he knew the victory was going to happen. The sticks and stones were only second for him. But we'll get to those. Now, perspective really matters, doesn't it? It really matters. Some of you in your marriages, you talk about the same problem, but you each have a different what? Perspective on the problem. It reminded me, there was an English professor that went into his class. He writes these words out. Pay attention. Woman without her man is a savage. Now he writes that on the blackboard, and then he directs his students to punctuate the sentence correctly. Perspective. Here's what the men wrote. Woman without her man is a savage. And all God's men said, don't. I'm just kidding, all right? Don't do it. All right, now that's the way that the guys punctuated it, right? Initially, it was just a flat line, right? Guys, punctuate this. And then he says, all right, ladies, I want you to punctuate this. And here's what the ladies came up with. Woman, without her, man is a savage. Now, is there a little bit of difference between the two statements, you think? Now, it's just one line of text. It's like, could you go and grammatically shape this thing properly? It's like the difference when you say, you know, let's eat, comma, grandma, and let's eat grandma. Grammar matters, right? One of those is a little gross. The other, we're for it. You get the idea. Perspective. Now, before a stone was ever thrown, David had a perspective on how Goliath was going to be whipped, didn't he? He knew. This is why he had a confidence that nobody else around him had, including the king. Circumcision was a sign of the covenant. And the goal of the covenant, my friends, is to cover. That's what a covenant means, is to be covered. Now, Dr. Tony Evans said something that I took. This was some years ago, and I never forgot it. And I just thought it was great, and so I wanted to share it with you today. Here's what he said. He said, it's like an umbrella. When you think of a covenant, it's like an umbrella when you're in the rain. If you have it, you have a covering. You possess it, and so you're in it. However, if it isn't open, the covering doesn't cover you, even though you possess the covering. Until you open it, place yourself under it, you are not covered by the covenant. You get it? Sometimes you have people that are, quote, people of faith, and they're holding their umbrella down like this and wonder why they're getting rained on. And so on the one hand, legally speaking, you're a child of a covenant because you gave yourself to Christ some years ago. But then you take your umbrella down, you fold it up, and you use it basically to walk with it and wonder why the rain is pouring on you. It's because you're not using the umbrella. It's one thing to have a standing with Jesus where you are forgiven by him. It is a completely different thing in the covenant to function in the covenant with him. David was doing both. He was under the covenant with God, and he was functioning under the covenant with God. See, to be clear, the umbrella doesn't stop it from raining, does it? The umbrella doesn't stop it from raining. It stops it from raining on you. That's what the umbrella does. So what this means for us is this. All Christians are equal in the sense that we are under a covenant with Jesus. Legally, you are forgiven. Legally, I am forgiven. But that does not mean that you are operating under the covenant with Jesus. And so we're not all equal in terms of the empowerment benefits of the cross of Jesus. You are equal in terms of the empowerment benefits of the cross of Jesus, not just when you're under, but you're in the covenant with him. Just like David in this story. And he was one of a kind because the rest of everybody else walks away. What that means is that you can have a legal status that is not equal to your present experience. Here's the other example Tony Evans gave that I thought was a keeper. He says, for some of you know what this is like. You're in a marriage. Legally, your marriage is, you know. However, how you function in your marriage is different than the legal standing that you have in your marriage. So for some of you, you are legally married, but you're not functioning under the covenant of what you agreed to in your marriage. How's that going for you? You get the idea? It's the same thing. Legally, you have a standing with God. How are you functioning in that standing with God? Only you can answer that question. Here's another way of understanding it. The key to all of this and to having the empowerment of God as you face the Goliaths in your life is this, is that you stay in lock and step connection with your Lord. That is how you do it. It's one thing when you think of garage door sensors. By the way, what happens when those things get out of line? They ain't gonna go up or down, right? It's not necessarily a problem of power and whether the power is there. Power can be there. You can look and see that they're plugged into the wall, that none of the stuff has been tripped in your house, that the power is there. But when those things are not in line with each other, they don't communicate with each other. And when they don't communicate with each other, guess what? Your doors aren't going anywhere. Sometimes, friends, it is not about the power that you have available to you. It is your lack of connection and connectivity to that power that is already in you. I could ask this question, what's your Goliath? Honestly, friends, it's probably a little bit different for you than it is for me. But you know what? We still have the same possibilities in Jesus for the power to overcome it. The question is what's your connection? So David doesn't see Goliath by the way that other people see him. He had a different perspective. The issue is spiritual first, then it's rocks upside the head second. It's in that order. David wasn't seeing what everybody else was seeing. Fear is running their life, and that became a spiritual alignment problem for the Israelites. Not connecting. Notice even in verse 40, it says, then he takes his staff in his hand, he chooses five smooth stones from the stream, puts them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag with his sling in his hand, and what does he do? He does what nobody else does. He runs to the giant. He's like, it's time. David just went from defense, which is what everybody else is doing. They're like this, right? And he goes to offense and he goes, this guy's on. See the difference? David had both God and a plan. Why five stones? Have you ever wondered that? Some people have speculated. Some thought that David chose five smooth stones because Goliath had four relatives. Did you know that? And David was readying himself to whoop all of them. It's not just the big guy in the middle. It's when I'm done with him, I'm coming after you, 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 and you. I just need five stones for it. This theory is based on 2 Samuel chapter 21, verses 15 to 22. That passage lists four large Philistines who were related to Goliath in some way. Now, they all have really difficult names to pronounce, and I'm going to spare her from having to sign them for you today. You're welcome. One of them, by the way, one of them even was a giant with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, feet. So he really had good balance. You get it? But here's what it says. These four were born to the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hands of his servants. The account in 1 Samuel 17 does not suggest that David knew necessarily about Goliath's brothers or that he would have to fight the whole family. But here's what you did actually see, is that he came ready to fight. For some of you, here's what you want. What you want is you want God just to do the fighting for you rather than God to empower you to overcome. Notice that's not the way it worked here. And I want you to survey Scripture to see how God works when you have a giant in your life. He empowers you to overcome it, but we have to quit asking God to do all the work. So what do? First thing you have to do, my friends, is you have to identify the Goliath. Didn't Henry Cloud say that? You think David, when he walks out here, he's unaware of Goliath? You think? He knows the guy's over 9 feet tall. He's looking right at him. He's looked for 40 days where the guy comes over the hill and he mocks all of the army of Israel. He knows that. He gets it. He knows that he's whooped a lot of people before. He gets that. You got to name the Goliath. So what's the Goliath? And then second, I want you to remind yourself of some important truths today, some really important ones. I'm going to give you this. In 1 John chapter 5, verses 1 to 4, here's what it says. Everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God, and everyone who loves the Father also loves the one born of him. This is how we know that we love God's children, when we love God and obey his commands. For this is what the love of God is. It's to keep his commands. And his commands, they're not a burden. They're not a burden. Because everyone who has been born of God conquers the world. You see it? You conquer the world. And this is the victory that has conquered the world, our faith. You see a connection in David through his obedience that conquers the Goliath and the world. It's going to be the same thing for you. As you walk in faith and obedience and you conquer the Goliath in your world. John, by the way, on the one hand, is dealing with your legal status before Jesus. Everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God, and everyone who loves the Father has been born of him. Legally, you are forgiven. Question, how are you functioning right now in that forgiveness and in that empowerment? Because here's the other thing that we keep in mind, and this is Colossians chapter 2, verse 15. He, this is Jesus, disarmed the rulers and authorities. He disgraced them publicly. He triumphed over them. Colossians 2, 15. Now think about what that means. On the one hand, he's looking at the resurrection and saying, I just whooped death, by the way. If I whooped death, I want you to think of everything else I can whoop for you. He did what? He disarmed the rulers and authorities. He disgraced them publicly. He triumphed over them. And now I want you to think about how we often see the things that are in our life. Huge. Insurmountable. Can't be beaten. And Jesus is saying, or Paul is saying about Jesus, no, he already beat this. Here's an example. What the enemy most wants from you, what Satan most wants from you, is to believe that he has the power. It's like a disguise, but he wants you to believe that he has the power. But if you look at Romans 8:37, it says, we're more than conquerors through him who loved us. Now, when you think about conquering, to conquer is to be victorious over an adversary, obviously. But to be more than a conqueror means that we not only achieve victory, but we are overwhelmingly victorious. It's football. It's 72-0, and you're only in the third quarter. Overwhelmingly victorious. If the final score of a basketball game is 142-6, we know that the opposition put up a fight, but they weren't much match for the victors, right? They still got their 6 points, but they also still got creamed. The win was beyond the scope of a regular victory. We need to remind ourselves of this. Satan is the adversary. He sends all kinds of life-defeating, joy-stealing attacks to threaten the well-being of the faith of God's children. It's what he does. It is what he does. He wants you to have the perception that he has the power. When Colossians 2:15 says, nope, that power got taken away from him. It's gone. Many of the attacks listed in Romans chapter 8, verses 35 to 39, listen to these. What are the kinds of things that Satan does? Trouble, hardship, persecution, famine, nakedness, sword, death. Those things are all listed by Paul. And in every single instance, what does he say? Whipped. Beaten. It reminded me of this. How many of y'all seen The Wizard of Oz? Can I see your hands? My wife doesn't like that movie. She thinks it's weird. There are parts of it, I'm going to agree with her. His parts are weird. First time I remember seeing the monkeys flying around, I was like, what in the world? All right, so here's the enemy's strategy, remember? The enemy's strategy is that he wants you to think that he has all of the power. But you remember The Wizard of Oz? This is the way The Wizard of Oz actually appears. Like, you walk in, they open the doors, and you see this hologram of a head. And that's pretty creepy looking, don't you think? You see fire blasting out of the sides and whatnot. And how are they reacting? I gotta admit, they were all a little scared, weren't they? Weren't they? However, you remember the rest of the story? The curtain gets turned, and they take a look, and there's this little old man standing back there. And this little old man is standing there with this thing he's talking into that magnifies his voice and makes him seem much more scary than he actually is. And when they look back there and they see that, they're like, all right. That's exactly the point. What Satan wants you to believe is that he is the hologram head with fire blasting out, and that if you approach, you get taken. When all you really had to do was look behind the curtain and remind him, no, you're a little man that already got beat. One reminder for you today, and this is where I end. For those of you that long ago claimed Jesus, I'm asking you a simple question today. I'm not asking you, are you in a covenant with him? I'm asking you, how you're functioning in your covenant with him? How's your communication with him? Could you take a look at the way that you have acted, spoken, whatever, and could you say, no, you know what? Through God's grace and his empowerment, I have not let any of these circumstances take control over things, and I certainly haven't yielded my self-control to this. Can you say that? All right, that's one thing. Are you under the covenant? How are you functioning in the covenant? But maybe you came in here today, you've been a little bit skeptical about Christianity. Here's the thing that I want you to understand. Jesus has something to say to you. You know, for the promise of believers, it is, take heart, I've overcome the world, right? But what you need to understand is that you cannot raise, when you think of an umbrella, you cannot raise an umbrella over your head that you do not have. You cannot do it. You cannot claim the empowerment of Christ. You cannot claim the victory of Christ. You cannot claim the forgiveness of Christ until you call to Christ. That is the way that it works. So even though grace is sufficient to cover a multitude of sins, all of this, you go from the Old Testament to the New, and what do you see? God enters and desires a covenant with his people so that his people will respond to the grace that he gives through the covenant so that they can be covered by him. Many of you aren't. It's not just walking around with an umbrella down. You're not walking around with an umbrella at all. And Jesus wants something different for you. He wants something different for you. He doesn't want sin to get the last word in your life. He wants his grace to cover your sin. He doesn't want you to walk in unforgiveness. He wants you to claim the forgiveness that you can find in him. It's what he wants for you. It's what he wants. And so this morning, I give you an opportunity, just like every week. We spend some time in response and prayer. You know why? It's because we're here. The way, the stuff of the world, we've put it aside for a little bit. We came here. We came here to learn, to grow in grace, to be changed, and to have an experience with Jesus. My question for you this morning is, what do you want to get out of this experience with Christ right now? And so I want you just to take a moment. Bow your head. Bow your heads. All this is for is so that you can remove some distractions from your life. Just remove them. And I want you to answer a couple of simple questions because we're end with prayer and we're going to end with praise. And I also end with a promise that you reach out to the staff this week. Maybe you're just in a time of life, you need somebody to walk alongside you. We're here for you, to pray with you, to walk, to do that walk with you. We believe in community. But what is it that you need to lay at the feet of Jesus today, the Goliath that is in front of you that needs to be defeated? Name the problem. And then just like you've seen in these passages today, know that God is bigger.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.